Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business and nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com for details. Man, we have a great show in store for you today. So, hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So, let's take a look at what's on tap today. Today is Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. He would be 83 years old today. Now, what does that dream mean to you? If he were alive today, what would he say about the state of our union? Also, we're going to be talking about South Carolina, the drug testing laws. What you hear will surprise you. It's a little bit about slavery and mathematics. Also, did Tavis Smiley have a change of heart about President Obama? Details coming up soon. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, check in at Foursquare, and Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. And once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. Now, I'll be reading your tweets live on the air, and I also have a chat room opened out there. So, leave your comments, ask your questions, make your comments out there. So, whatever your pleasure, the chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old Marbell, we would love to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, a lot of people are talking about the life, legacy, and the legend of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. They're talking about his speeches, his marches, his sermons. But I want to reflect today upon the events that took place surrounding the holiday itself. In particular, the idea of Martin Luther King Jr. Day as a holiday was promoted by labor unions in contract negotiations. Now, after King's death, United States Representative John Conyers, he's a Democrat from Michigan, and United States Senator Edward Brooke, a Republican from Massachusetts, introduced a bill in Congress to make King's birthday a national holiday. The bill first came to vote in the U.S. House of Representatives in 1979. However, it fell 5 votes short of the number needed for passage. Two of the main arguments mentioned by opponents were that a paid holiday for federal employees would be too expensive, and that a holiday to honor a private citizen would be contrary to long-standing tradition. Now, you know that Martin Luther King Jr. did not hold a public office. Now, only 2 other persons have national holidays in the United States honoring them. Now, of course, that would be George Washington, the first president of the United States, and, of course, Christopher Columbus. He's the navigator, colonizer, and explorer from the Republic of Genoa, whose voyages across the Atlantic Ocean led to general European awareness of the American continents. Now, soon after the King Center turned to support from the corporate community and the general public, the success of this strategy was cemented when musician Stevie Wonder released a single, Happy Birthday. Now, I would sing a rendition of that, but I don't want to bore you. But for the most part, you're pretty much familiar with that song. And it was popularized the campaign in 1980, and it hosted the Rally for Peace press conference in 1981. Now, 6 million signatures were collected for a petition to Congress to pass the law. Now, what you may not know is that Senator Jesse Helms, Republican of North Carolina, led opposition to the bill and questioned whether King was important enough to receive such an honor. He also criticized King's opposition to the Vietnam War and accused him of espousing action-oriented Marxism. President Ronald Reagan might also have been opposed to the holiday, citing cost concerns. He grudgingly signed the measure only after Congress passed it with an overwhelming veto-proof majority, 338-90, in the House of Representatives and 78-22 in the Senate. Reagan earlier said that he would do so because Congress seemed bent on making it a national holiday. Not because he wanted to, but because Congress seemed bent on making it a national holiday. You also may not know that Senator John McCain, the Republican of Arizona, voted against the creation of the holiday to honor King and later defended Arizona Republican Governor Evan Mecums. Now, of course, McCain reversed his position and encouraged his home state of Arizona to recognize the holiday despite his opposition from Mecum. Now, on January 17, 2000, that's only 12 years ago, for the first time, Martin Luther King Jr. Day was officially observed in all 50 states. Arizona, New Hampshire, and Utah, 1992, 1999, and 2000, respectively, were the last three states to recognize the holiday. Now, here we are, 12 years later, from all states officially observing it, and I ask you the simple question. How many of you are actually taking the day off? How many of you or how many of your companies are officially observing the day? Now, Jim and I were discussing a lot of things over the last couple of days around entitlement. The fact that our society is integrated. The fact that the laws that are in place for us today were not a part of the original Constitution because we are the beneficiaries of amendments to the Constitution. And so here we are, the beneficiaries of all of the work that went into making this an official holiday. And again, I pose the question, how many of you are actually observing it? 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. I want to hear from you. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I want to know from you, if Martin Luther King Jr. was alive today, what do you think he would say about the state of our union? What would he say about the Occupy Wall Street movement? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We will be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few moments, we're going to open up the phone lines. But in the meantime, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. Now, I introduce to some, and I present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Hey, Jima, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, it is today, of course, is marks the 83rd day of Martin Luther King's birthday, had he been alive. And now here we are 12 years later after them officially recognizing, observing, I should say, the holiday in all 50 states. Where are we today, Jima? I mean, if he were alive today, what do you think the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would say?
Well, he would have to say that we have much work to do and that we have not accomplished everything because there's still too many people that don't have. As you know, when he was assassinated, he was working on what was termed the Poor People's Campaign. And if he was alive today to see the numbers of 1 in 4 children that go hungry every day and the income gap that has happened between the middle class and the wealthy and the poor and the rich, he would know and would tell us, you know, emphatically that our work is not done. And as a matter of fact, we failed because there are still so many poor people whose voices have been silenced, who are not being heard because we don't have the money to go lobby our politicians, which we would need to have money to go and lobby our politicians to do what's right for the people that they serve, the society that we've become. And so I don't think he would be, he would be proud of the fact that you know, 4 years ago we elected, you know, President Barack Obama, but he would not have sat down and said, okay, my work is done. And I think so many of us sat down and said, okay, we did it. And that wasn't all. I mean, that isn't all. That's just one drop, of what it is. And I'm sure if President Obama could say so, he'd rather have people working than be president. He'd rather have people's incomes match, you know, what they have to put out every month for gas and food and taking care of their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd rather all those things be in place. If he could, if all those things could be in place and he not be president, I feel deep in my heart that he would be okay with that. And so, you know, Dr. King would not be sitting on the sideline. He would be still out there with Reverend Joseph Lowry, you know, talking and telling the truth, you know, and speaking truth to power, as they say.
You know, it's interesting. You the first thing that that came out of your mouth was referencing the Poor People's Campaign as opposed to racial disparities or racial discrimination. When most people think of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., they think of him for a champion of race. But the reality is, as he got more mature in his process and leading and things of that nature, he began to shift his focus towards economic disparity, which, of course, it kind of spread across all racial boundaries. It wasn't just about race in the end. It was more about the economic disparities.
That's correct. And unfortunately, that, you know, still there. You know, we haven't grown a lot in that area, you know. And I think, you know, and you and I have had this conversation before as it relates to what did we really get out of integration and what do we have to really show for it, because our schools are still inadequate. As I stated, our income gap is still significant. Our unemployment numbers are still twice as that of, you know, numbers. So what did we really get, you know? And here we sit in a land that's the best country in the world, and everyone is trying to get into, and yet we have so many ills in our society, and we're not taking care of them. We're not really taking care of the least of these. And for a nation that was allegedly built on Christian principles and have all of these strong Christian values about life, because that's about the only thing they ever talk about is life, but they never talk about taking care of that life when it gets here. And if for a nation that was based on Christian principles, the scripture speaks strongly about taking care of the least of these. And Jesus said, when I was hungry, you didn't feed me. And so you have to wonder where we're going as a nation when we can't do the simple things. And let's make sure that we don't go to bed hungry, that people aren't living on the street unnecessarily. When you have, you know, thousands upon thousands of homes that have been vacated because of failure to pay or can't afford to pay anymore, and companies coming in and just tearing down the homes and the banks just walking off with the money, and yet you're completely tearing down a neighborhood. So it's just so many things that we could be doing differently to take care of the least.
You know, I definitely agree with you on that. I wonder, though, now that we're in the 21st century, now that we have been afforded some opportunities, not a lot, but some, where does the responsibility lie? Or should I say, where does the individual's responsibility lie in trying to bring himself out of those situations that you talked about, school, unemployment, things of that nature?
Well, when you take a look at the fact that there are more people now who do have college degrees and some education behind them that have been on their job for 10, 15 years, that are employed because of a lot of the decisions that have been made in our Congress in Washington, D.C. in terms of outsourcing jobs. So a lot of jobs that built the middle class, those factory jobs, those manufacturing jobs, those jobs in the auto industry, those jobs have been lost, and some of them have been lost for forever. And so it's to some credit, it's not everybody's own fault that they have fallen on hard times. Every person that has lost their home did not lose their home because they bought a house they couldn't afford. And so that's the big elephant in the room. People want to make the assumption that everybody that's like, well, you couldn't afford that anyway. And that's not true. There are some people that had two-parent incomes where they were making good money, and they could afford everything they had based on the salaries that they were making, and you cut that in half. You cut that in half, anybody's going to struggle. You know, and so instead of, you know, blaming people who have really fallen on hard times, you know, we ought to find a way to lift them up. Now, there are some that did get some things that they could not afford. You know, we know that to be true.
Right, right.
And because of that, you know, they are in the situation that they're in. But we still shouldn't demonize them and make them feel less than. We still should, you know, show them a better way, train them, teach them, because maybe they didn't know, you know. Maybe it was just they had some bad teaching, and they just thought things would get better, and they just never did.
Okay, so I think that's fair. But I'm putting this in the context of the Republicans' argument about the government, you know, doing too much, if you will. So where is the line, or where should the line be drawn in these situations when it's the government responsibility to kind of help or aid and abet the people that have come upon these situations and the individual's responsibility? So where is the line drawn there?
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, you know, when the Republican Party always say, I mean, you know, just recently Newt Gingrich talked about the food stamps, right? And quite naturally, if you lose your job, or if you get half of your income, it's taken away from you. Now you may have to go get on food stamps. So, does the government have a responsibility when a person, you know, gets in a situation there or not?
I think so, because that's what it was originally designed for, was to help people who could not take care of themselves. So that's what government does. It steps in. Because when here's a prime example, and I may be talking too much on this particular subject, but just like the government steps in and takes care of companies, takes care of states, so when a state is under fire, literally,
right,
and they don't have the resources to fight that fire, they call on the government.
Yep.
Right. When the state
absolutely.
Is underwater,
yeah.
literally, from flooding, from hurricanes, they call on the government to come in and help them get through.
I'm glad you brought that up
So how is it that it's, you know, okay to call on the government in those instances and of no fault of anybody's? I mean, even if the fire was started by somebody,
if
it rages out of control, that state still can get some money. So
that's
how
right.
is it that that's okay to call the government in for that, but it's not okay for me to be able to utilize the federal assistance in terms of being able to feed my family?
You know, and that's where I was going, because, you know, it's funny how the Republican Party will argue the fact that they shouldn't do these things for individuals or for poor people, if you will. But again, you gave a perfect example or a great example of how they step in to help states. And the truth be told, they do the same thing for companies, business. You know, there's no reason that, you know, oil companies should be receiving billions of dollars in subsidies. There's no reason that these banks should have received billions of dollars of bailout money. And so if the government is going to go out and help people because they're in need, then I think that help should extend to the individual themselves as well. And so in the spirit of Martin Luther King Jr., I think it is important for us to understand that, yeah, we should be able to do these things with respect to education, get jobs. But there's a time, and you explained it well, that you may fall upon hard times. It may be an instance where you lose your job. You have degrees. All the things are – you're doing all the right things, but these companies choose to shift your job overseas because it cuts costs. You know, that's the capitalistic way, right? And so when you find yourself in a situation of no fault of your own, then what do you do? And then I think the government has a place, has a role to come in and provide assistance in that fashion. And so I just wanted to make that point emphatically, because there's a lot of people out there are always pointing the finger at the poor person about how they're draining the government, how they're draining the resources. So I want to extend that beyond just the individual, what you said it best when you said the states and also the corporations, they also are receiving handouts as well. Now, I want to go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you.
So I want to ask the question now, and basically the title of the show is, what does the dream mean to you?
What does the dream mean to me? It meant more than, or shall I say, it means more than just dreaming, because in the dream state, you're not doing anything. So his particular dream for me is more about doing. How do I embody the words that he spoke in a daily basis in my life, in my son's life, in my family life, in terms of taking care of one another, in terms of ensuring that the things that I have are not all about me, that I, whatever I get, I'm obligated to bring somebody along with me. I don't think we do enough of that. I don't think we do enough of reaching back to bring somebody along, to show them, you know, what I have and what it took to get here and some of the pitfalls so that they don't fall the same way I did. You know, I don't think we do enough of that. So to me, the dream is an action. You know, we hold each other accountable. That speech was more about holding America accountable for what she had not done, what was still left for her to do. And as we sit in 2012, there's still a lack of accountability. She still hasn't done it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. You know, the phone lines are open right now. If you want to weigh in on what did the dream mean to you, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And I also want to talk about the fact that, again, you open up with the Poor People's Campaign. Most people associate the Rev. Dr. Martin Luther King with racial discrimination or racial disparities, but the reality is he was more economic focused, if you will. And when I look at the fact that he made reference to the check, to the vouch check, there's a further indication of where he was when he's talking about this economic situation that we were in, the fact that America has given us a bounce check, basically. And so when I think of the dream, I think of the dream and making coming true to what we were due. When I say we, I'm talking about African-American people in general, the whole 40 acres and a mule component, because the reality is that the labor that this nation was built on is a direct reflection of the wealth that they are able to attain. And when you look at the fact that the infrastructure and a majority of the wealth that was accumulated in the time was built on slaves. And because we're talking about a capitalistic society, when we're talking about the fact that there are cheap or free labor that you're able to make, to sell your products and services off of almost zero labor costs, then of course you're going to build wealth in that fashion. And so now you free the slaves, and they start out literally in the negative. And so it takes them generations upon generations to get from the negative just to get to zero. And so when I think about the dream, I think about getting back to zero. I mention that all the time, is being able to put my son, my grandson, my great grandson in a position where they won't have to start from zero. And so to be able to you know, get the right education, to be able to get the right job, to be able to get the right career, to be able to diversify the amount of money that I make or the amount of money that we make is all important, because when I think about the dream, I think about making sure that the next generation doesn't start at zero. So
and that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to shift gears a little bit to something that happened in Atlanta. Now, by now, I'm sure you've heard what happened in Atlanta, but I want to play for you a segment by ABC 15 that talks about how the teachers were teaching some third graders about math. They were actually using slaves and picking cotton as examples of how to teach math. If you haven't heard this, what you're about to hear is going to be very, very startling. So stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gmail can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gma. And Ask Gma says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. The phone lines are open. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So shifting gears now to what happened in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I'm going to play the tape. I want to play the evidence here. There's a third grade math is not normally the course where students are taught about beating slaves and dehumanizing labor. But two teachers at Beaver Ridge Elementary School in Atlanta thought it was perfectly normal to integrate within their lessons. So I'm going to play for you, and I want to get your comments. This is definitely something to think about here. Take a listen.
Moving on to today's first topic, parents near Atlanta, Georgia, they are outraged this afternoon, and it all has to do with their kids' math homework. Check out a couple of the problems third graders at Beaver Creek Elementary had to do. Quote, each tree had 56 oranges. If 8 slaves picked them equally, then how much would each slave pick? Also a question, if Frederick got 2 beatings per day, how many beatings did he get in 1 week? When angry parents called the school to talk about these worksheets that were sent home with their students, the school explained the teachers were trying to incorporate history lessons into the math lesson.
Okay, Gma. The teachers were trying to introduce history lessons into the math lessons. What do you think about that?
What do I think about that? I think that that was probably a better way to do that than to bring up slavery. And this just goes back to what we've been saying on this show for over the probably the last year, the insensitivity that people have around slavery, and they try to use it as if some sort of badge and of honor, and that, you know, it's like slavery is the end all, the be all. Let's use slavery as an example. We go back to this time last year with what the contract that the Republican candidates were signing that that said that that black children were better off in slavery, and we just tend to marginalize what slavery was and the impact it had on black people. When we allow them to make these sorts of references, and I'm just thankful that the parents of these young children did not sit down on this one. I am so thankful that they were angry enough to do something, because sometimes we get angry, but we don't do anything. But I am glad they were angry enough and outraged enough and offended enough to go out and make this be a national story. So there's no other time in history that gets used and misused like slavery. I doubt.
I like that, yeah. That used and misused, yeah, absolutely.
Used and misused as slavery. Because I want, if they want to talk history, then, you know, would they have used the same sort of analogy, numbers-wise, as it relates to how many Jews were killed?
Right, that's right.
If you kill so many a day, how many did he kill? I'm just wondering, what would the outcry be? Would, you know, how fast would that have made national news? Where it took a little while for this, if you wasn't on the grind, you know, this kind of flew under the radar for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden. So, but I guarantee you, if it had been any other event in history that had to do with any other race of people, we would have heard about it long before we did. But I'm just, it's appalling. It's so insensitive. And when are we going to stop allowing slavery to be used as some sort of token? Like if it wasn't that bad. I guess they think if they keep trying to make it normal, then how they treat us now would be okay too, I guess.
Right, right, right. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We also have a chat room out there, open out there. You can leave your comments, ask questions, or you can follow me on Twitter and at TaylorMade101. So, Jim, I think that, again, you mentioned that this was an insensitive approach to African Americans in general, slaves in particular, our ancestors, and for them to continue to throw and like what you said, use and misuse the reference to slavery, I think is a slap in the face of black people. And so it's interesting to see that people do this, and in the context of this post-racial America, as people try to keep throwing around because of the fact that we have an African-American president. But as you can see, just the last couple of weeks alone, not taking everything in its entirety, there's always been a reference towards some degradation or some insensitive nature or comment towards the post towards African-Americans. So, and it's continued to do that again and again.
Yes, and unfortunately, those that have the bully pulpit, as they call it, are slow sometimes to respond, because we don't want to be perceived as the one to call it what it is. We don't want everything to be about race, but when you're responding to something, excuse me, you're not bringing up race. You're just responding to it. So when we respond to the Rick Santorums of the world, with his blah people, when we respond to Newt Gingrich, that this president has been the biggest food stamp president in history, and the reference there is that he's referring to black people. When we respond to Newt Gingrich that he wants to give black people food stamps, paychecks instead of food stamps, with the reference there being that that's about black people. So we can respond to those things and not make it, you know, we didn't make it be about race. They, every instance, race was brought up into the conversation without even a black person being in the room.
Pulled us into the conversation, absolutely.
Yeah, we were, not only were we weren't even in the room covering the story. And so what is that? Why is, I mean, I think I asked this question last week. You know, why is it that race, and it's not, it's black people. It's not race in terms of we're talking about. No, they are specifically talking about black people, not people of color, you know, how we try to lump everybody in there. No, every last one of those comments were directed towards black people. And why is that?
You know, that's an interesting question, because it seems like that we are again, it can be used as a doormat. I mean, especially when you're talking about pandering to the base, or pandering to a certain group of people. I think it's interesting to see that if we continue to move in the direction of pandering towards a certain base, then we have a major problem in the United States.
We already have a major problem in the United States, because what the commentators would say is that, oh, they're just talking to their base when they have that conversation. Well, like, that makes it okay.
Right.
So it's okay for a group of people, of white people, to sit around the room and talk about black people, and talk about how you don't want black people to take nobody else's money, and you want them to go out and get their own. So that's okay to sit around a room with white people and have that conversation. I totally disagree with that.
Right, that's right.
I totally disagree with that.
And so to bring the conversation back to this particular story, they're third grade students. You know, that they have an impressionable mind, that you can damage their sense of self. You know, their self esteem. I mean, there's a lot that goes on behind a young, impressionable mind like that. For you continue to over and over in their mind, when they're doing any kind of calculations or when they're doing any kind of mathematics, that they can make an association at an early age with slavery every time they're dealing with numbers. I mean, the psychology there is horrible for them to try to do that in such a manner that could have a profound impact on a third grader's life. We're talking about a 7-8-year-old that they're doing this to. And so, you know, I wonder, is this intentional or not? What do you think?
Of course it's intentional. You know, it's intentional, because if you keep somebody's mind preoccupied with what they can't do or that they're less than, then eventually they will begin to believe that and to act that out. So, of course, and we're talking third grade, which we know historically data shows us what happens in the fourth grade.
Right,
and
right,
so,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's intentional. You know, nothing that is done in our education system is by accident.
Right.
I think everything is strategically done to keep. And for some reason, once again, I go back to it, just, you know, in terms of African Americans or black, whatever you want to call yourself, in 2012.
Right.
I think it's majority of the time it's directed at us.
Yeah.
And so I have to still ask the question, why are they so afraid of black people being educated and knowing a little bit? What is that all about?
You know, I don't know. I'm going to play the tape one more time. I want to take a listen at something. I want you to listen to something real key here. Take a listen.
Moving on to today's first topic, parents near Atlanta, Georgia, they are outraged this afternoon, and it all has to do with their kids' math homework. Check out a couple of the problems third graders at Beaver Creek Elementary had to do. Quote, each tree had 56 oranges. If 8 slaves picked them equally, then how much would each slave pick? Also a question, if Frederick got 2 beatings per day, how many beatings did he get in 1 week? When angry parents called the school to talk about these worksheets that were sent home with their students, the school explained the teachers were trying to incorporate history lessons into the math lesson.
So you notice the reference that they made and how they used the word beatings, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
beatings. And they put it in the sentence twice. And again, this is the third grade students that they're making these this reference to beatings and slavery and mathematics. I can't find anywhere where it's appropriate to introduce this in mathematics at all.
Right. And you're not going to find it. And you've taught math. So, I mean, you are, in this area, a subject matter expert. So having taught math, you know that this isn't something that you would use to teach third graders, especially. Well, anybody. I don't care how old
they were. Right,
exactly,
exactly.
There's too many other ways you can get kids to understand the relations between how you get to 56 from 8.
Right, exactly. Well, exactly right.
And
right.
Slavery did not have to be the one you chose. Out of all the ways you can do that, you chose slavery.
Right. The phone lines are open again. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So I want to move on a little bit here into what's happening with these drug tests. Now, South Carolina wanted unemployed people to prove that they're not on drugs to qualify for unemployment insurance. And they want the long-term jobless to volunteer part-time to continue receiving benefits. Proposals to drug test poor and unemployed people have ricocheted from state to state over the past year, even landing in the U.S. House of Representatives. The South Carolina proposals taken together thus far represent the strictest measure targeted at unemployed people. We're going to take a quick break, and I want you to weigh in on this. Again, the law that South Carolina wanted unemployed people to prove that they're not on drugs to qualify for unemployment insurance. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Again, the phone lines are open to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And I have a chat room open out there as well. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. So shifting gears to now, there's drug testing going on in South Carolina. Of course, they want unemployed people to prove they're not on drugs to qualify for unemployment insurance. And they want the long-term jobless to volunteer part-time. That means go work for somebody for free to continue receiving benefits. Proposals to drug test poor and unemployed people have ricocheted from state to state over the past year, even landing in the U.S. House of Representatives. Jima Hill Cook, what do you think about this?
I'm speechless because they just keep coming up with things that have absolutely nothing to do with being the job creators that they claim that they were. And I would bet that the majority of these states have new Republican governors. So they've gone from the voting. Now they want to drug test everybody before they can receive benefits. Now you want me to go out and volunteer? When if that company has an opening, why don't they hire me?
That's right.
So,
If you're doing some work for them, that they have absolutely right.
What's that all about? You know, why don't you hire me to do the job instead of, you know, free labor? What does that remind you of?
We just talked about it.
You know, yes, we did. So here we are once again with a group of people who often talk about they want to take their country back. Well, where do they want to take it back to?
Mm-hmm.
When people who were the least of us, who you didn't even consider to be human, who you didn't even consider to be a person, gave you free labor? Because that's what volunteer is. I mean, I know we all volunteer at some point, but to go somewhere every day, 8-9 hours a day, that's a job. And when I have a job, I usually get paid for that, unless my going back is to slavery.
Right,
because that's what was free labor. And so it's amazing to me that they can come up with these ideas as though they're doing the country a favor.
Okay, so let me say this though.
Because if you go back to the governor in Florida that started this, and that was whatever his name is down in Rick Scott, I think that's his name down in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It was discovered that the drug company that was touted with having to run all these drug tests, he had some stock in.
Right. So let's
take a look at that.
Right. Uh-huh, that's right.
Yes, that's right. So let's not forget people. And now what they're finding is that they are actually spending more money to do the drug test and to have the test than they would be in paying the people on the road.
Okay, so
which is crazy.
Sounds wonderful. Let me take another position though. Let's say if you're working on a job, and in most occupations, people are subject to random drug tests. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're working and paying taxes, staying clean, so they might get drug tested. Why is it then that the unemployment gets a free ride? Why do they get to smoke weed and they ain't working, and here we are working hard every day, and we're subject. why shouldn't they be subject to the drug tests?
Okay, and I take a similar position. We're making some assumption that mm-hmm. they're just sitting around getting high all day.
Right.
So that's the first assumption that we're making. So let's say that in the beginning, you know, that there is some sort of process that one goes through. As you stated, most jobs nowadays require a background check and a drug screening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And most of the time, unless you get a promotion, you don't really have to go through that drug screening probably ever again for the length of time you're at that company.
Mm-hmm.
For most places. I work for state government in two states, in Colorado and Missouri, and that's about how I remembered it.
Isn't the legislators are doing the unemployed people a favor? I mean, let's say if I pass the legislation to say that you must be drug tested periodically or at random, whatever term you want to use for this, and to say that I am preparing you just in case somebody wants to hire you. I know you're clean. I know you're good to go. Because if I don't pass this legislation, then you go out and you're drawing money, this unemployment dollars, and then all of a sudden a job is available, then you can't qualify for that job because you've been on drugs. Isn't that fair?
Well, see, you're walking a tight line there once again, because we talk about government being in our business, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if we can't have it both ways. We can't say we want government out of our business and allow people to do what they need to do, but then we want government in our business because now you're helping me to stay drug free because you're going to make me go and have a mandatory drug test on a random basis because you're trying to make sure I'm going to be available when that job comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Really? That's a stretch. But, you know, somebody somewhere is probably thinking that exact same train of thought.
Right.
But you can't have it both ways. You can't have big government and small government at the same time. So either you want the help of government or you don't want the help of government. You can't take the help of government when it's convenient. When we want government to tell us how to raise our kids and how what we, you know, when I can go on assistance and when I can't, when I got, we want all that. But on the other hand, then I don't want nobody telling me what to do. I mean, we can't have it both ways.
Right.
And that's where we, you know, trying to manage the two, you just can't do it that way. Now, as I stated, I agree with you. On a small scale, there may need to be something done on the front end, and not just to certain, see, the problem is they're making about certain types of people. If this is across the board, then it's across the board. I mean, I agree with you. Most jobs, when you are hired, you do have to have some sort of drug test completed. I agree with you on that. So why not have the same thing happen when you have to get your assistance? I agree with you, but that doesn't mean once a month I got to go pee in a cup, because I would suspect that if that's the case, if government does that for anybody that receives any type of government assistance, then our United States Senate, Congress need to go pee in a cup.
So that's what I was going to say next. Where do we draw the line? That if we start with unemployment, because we're talking about government benefits, right? We're saying their argument is simply, we're going to pay you government assistance while you're unemployed. Then our condition is to take this drug test. Then if that becomes the standard, right, then we must consider the same assistance when it comes to food stamps, the same assistance when it comes to federal employees, the same assistance when it comes to anything, any federal dollar that leaves, the government. Then we must also apply that there.
That's right. And so when you are no longer an elected official and you still getting your check and your
That's
insurance
right.
from the federal government, then Mr. U.S. Representative and Mr. U.S. Senator, you need to go pee in the cup.
That's right.
Now, that's an argument that somebody needs to make.
Right, right. And so because they're trying to isolate it to the unemployed, they're trying to demonize them and say, hey, you're the people
right.
that has a drug problem, or you can't get jobs because you're on drugs, and they're shaping the argument around dollars are tied to the government, so they should be represented, or they should be given a standard to meet in order to receive that funding. Then I think that should be applied across the board if they're going
to. But I think more importantly though, we need to force them to define assistance.
Right. Right.
Because in its most generic form, they would all need to go pee in a cup. So when you say government assistance or whatever, what do you mean by that? Is it now you are discriminating against people who happen to be unemployed?
Right, right,
right. Is that legal?
You're right.
Now you have, you know, a case the ACLU needs to get involved and challenge it, because then you're discriminating against a segment of the population.
And I think they are starting to pick up on this, and I think those arguments are now being made, because when you put people in that category or that boat, then you now open yourself up for all kinds of litigation, right, lawsuits and things of that nature. So it'll be interesting to see. We're going to follow this over the next weeks, months to come, because we've been talking about this for about a year now, as you mentioned, and when it first came out in Florida. And so now it's kind of spreading like wildfire across, because these Republicans have been elected. Now they're in positions to make these type of pass these laws. So it'll be interesting again to see what unfolds here. Okay. So I want to shift now to something a little bit more politics, but it is around Tavis Smiley. Now, over the past I'm going to say 3 years now. Tavis has been really critical of the president, to say the least. And so it seems to me that he is having a change of heart. So I want to play something, and I want to get you to respond. He was on the Joe Madison show a few days ago, and listen what he had to say. Here's Tavis Smiley on the Joe Madison show, the Black Eagle.
Between the current crop of Republicans, Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, Ron Paul, who else is out there? Rick Santorum, Rick Perry, President Obama, and none of the above to vote for. Who would you vote for, Tavis?
That's not a choice. The answer is Barack Obama. I voted for Barack Obama the last time, and barring some unforeseen incident, I expect that I'll be voting for Barack Obama again this time. There's no doubt about the fact that Barack Obama is the best of what's out there. And I'm glad you asked that question, because too often we don't have these questions raised that give us a chance, Dr. West and myself, give us a chance to answer these questions. People act as if there are two choices, and there aren't two choices. There are three choices. I have to remind people this all the time. One choice is Obama. The other choice is the Republican nominee, whoever that will be. But the third choice is to make President Obama an even better president. And I think that's the duty and the responsibility of all of us, to get behind him, to be the wind at his back, to help him become a better president. I've said before, I'll say again, great presidents aren't born, they are made. And great presidents have to be pushed into their greatness. There is no Abraham Lincoln if there is no Frederick Douglass pushing him. There is no FDR if there is no A. Philip Randolph pushing him. There is no LBJ if there is no MLK pushing him. And left to his own devices and left to the people around him who have no track record of caring about Negroes, let me be frank and honest about that, left to the Democrats on Capitol Hill who can be oftentimes milquetoast and spineless, left to all those pressures, left to the Republicans who want him to fail, if that's the only pressure that comes to bear on him, he will not measure up. And we're going to look back on this 4 years, or I pray 8 years, when it's all said and done, and realize that we missed a major opportunity, that we did not lovingly and respectfully push him enough to be more aggressive. And the numbers are clear. You discuss this stuff every day. When he stands with a stronger spine, when he pushes back,
as we saw this December,
absolutely, when he goes out and sells his message to the American people, right, it resonates. But he's so much of a consensus builder, and right now is no time to be on the sideline. It's about drawing a line in the sand. My granddad said all the time, Tavis, there are some fights that ain't worth fighting even if you win. But there are other fights you have to fight even if you lose. And the spirit of Dr. King, as we move toward his holiday, I believe, I know, that if King were here today, lovingly and respectfully, he'd be pushing Obama to do more about politics.
So what do you think about that?
I agree with you. I think I actually agree with Tavis, you know, in terms of, which is odd, in terms of the need for us to ensure that he's just not a good president, but he's a great president. And although he's done a lot of good things already, he's done more in the time he's been in office than any other president before him.
True.
But the problem with that is that we don't have the right people out there letting everybody know. We have the wrong people talking. I like David Fluff and I like Axelrod and I like Gibbs, but they have a failure to connect with the average American person. And because of that failure to connect, the message isn't coming out really clear. So he needs to revamp that. But as it relates to what Tavis had to say, I do think, and I have to say this as a plug, as a point, when you look at these Republican debates that have happened over this course of all this time we've been talking about them, there has not been one commentator, moderator that looked like me. Not one. And there's no way you can tell me that there's not a commentator or moderator that looks like me that could have moderated one of those debates.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's unacceptable. And that's why you're not going to hear poverty come up, because you don't have anybody that's sitting there asking questions that remotely understands
about poverty. Right.
And that's not to say that only black people understand poverty, but we're a lot more sensitive to the issue than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And some kind of way, we would find a way to bring that up into the conversation. You know, if you want to talk about food stamps and you want to talk about, you know, getting people jobs, then that's the way to talk. You know, you can weed in a question about poverty, and let's call it poverty. I mean, let's, mm-hmm. you know, when those statistics came and the numbers from the census came out and we saw that we have 1 in 4 people now living in poverty, you know, we had debates that week.
Right.
And yet nobody talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with Tavis in that even the president, when he gets out on message and gets really out on the campaign trail, he too has to at least broach the subject. You know, he can't speak in broad terms, or, you know, where it appears and like it's appealing to everybody. He has to really narrow that thing down, and maybe he does that, I don't know, but somebody has to say the word poor. Somebody has to say, what are we doing about poverty?
Right.
For me to know that you're talking about me.
Right.
Because sometimes, you know, I get lost in the dialogue because I don't think you're talking to me.
Right. Just tune them out, basically.
Right, exactly. And so that's why I think that's messaging in terms of the people he have out there speaking. Some of them, I don't think they have the ability to connect. Now, Valerie Jarrett, she is the best person to talk about what the president has done and is doing. Secretary of Labor Hillary Solis, she is the best person out there talking about jobs. That's what she does.
Right.
That's who needs to be out there talking, not David Fluff, not Robert Gibbs, not nothing else.
Okay, so Tavis Miley, this is a new tune for him. I've heard him in fact, even before the president was elected, even before the inauguration, Tavis was really hard, negative. I mean, you couldn't really tell if he was a Democrat or what at this time. This seems to me like he's not changing his position, but he's moving back to the center, if you will, moving back closer towards President Obama. It looks like he's trying to now be a supporter of President Obama. Do you think this have anything to do with the fact that his speech got canceled?
Well, I think it has to do with a lot of things. I think it has to do with the fact that we all know that you can get more flies with honey. And if you want to be taken serious as a journalist, as somebody that's really concerned about your people, you can. And just like he said, everything he said, it wasn't attacking the president. It wasn't belittling the president. It wasn't talking down to the president or about. It wasn't doing any of that.
Right.
And yet he got his point across. And he's wasted the last year and a half to 2 years on all that negative energy
mm-hmm.
that could have really taken him someplace else.
People were toning him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people toned him out. People started feeling like, you know what, Tavis, you know, all what you said you were about, I'm not sure if you really were, because I just see you getting book deals.
Exactly.
And you going across country talking about touring, you know, a poverty tour. And at the end of the day, Did you guys have any job training at those sites that y'all did the poverty tours, or did you just spend a lot of time this summer talking about the president
right. And
what he hasn't done? So I just feel like, you know, it's good to see him change the tone and tenor of his message.
Mm-hmm.
He's right. We do have to push this president, as we have to push everybody to be great, to be, you know, better than just good. And it's interesting because I was talking to a young lady today, And I was telling her that I know she can do a lot better than what she is, but she doesn't put any work into it. She just
mm-hmm.
does just enough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because somebody similar said something to me like that. And what I said to her was, if you want to be seen as somebody that's really good, then you have to be on point all the time. I said practice is important. So you just can't show up and be ready to go game time. I said, when it's time to practice, because those coaches out there are going to ask, you know, how is she in practice? And if your coach says she's lazy, she doesn't do this, you might have all the skill in the world, But if you're not practicing to make it better, then you'll be one of a million again.
Yeah,
so that's what we have to do with each other. And I agree, you know, as often as we can in a way, because if you talk negative to me all the time, I'm not going to listen to you.
Right.
I'm going to tune you out. So
right.
I'm sure the president tuned Tavis and Dr. West out a long time ago because everything they had to say was negative.
And it was almost personal. You know? It was a personal attack. And you're not really making a point about the legislation or making a point about where the shortcomings are. It was always about his personal, calling him names and talking about all the things. And as an educated person, a person should be able to sift through all the negativity and move directly to the facts. And so out of all of President Obama's accomplishments, they very rarely acknowledge any of them. And so for them to come out always on the trail, on the campaign trail, get on these radio shows, on these TV shows, and just continually bash President Obama and not give him any credit for all the wonderful things he's done for a lot of different people, I thought was ludicrous for them in particular because of all of the things, their background, where they came from, the people, the messaging they used to do. So it really begs the question, what was their original motive?
Right, because when you look at the fact that when we did, when they were doing State of Black America.
Oh, yeah.
And the covenant and all those things during that time period that they did it, you know, I still, where was the push? And they often talk about, you know, holding other presidents accountable and pushing them as well. But I don't recall there being a meeting with anybody from the, and maybe it was, and I just don't know about it, with anybody from the White House or any of the staff from Clinton or Bush, that they went and talked about what came out of State of Black America.
Right.
But they went and talked about those 10 points, you know, and said, here's where we are. What are you going to do to address that? I don't remember that. So for you to now all of a sudden want to take all of this and lay it at the feet of President Obama, it seems disingenuous because you didn't do it before.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, they didn't do it with Bush, they didn't do it with Clinton. I mean, they didn't do it with anybody.
Right, and we've been doing. You were doing State of Black America long before President Obama was even in the Senate.
Exactly.
So you know you've had the opportunity, and it kept growing. Where then it was on C-SPAN. They went from covering it from 1 hour to covering it for the whole time. I mean, you had the national audience,
right?
You know, watching, and we bought the books. You know, I have all three of them. You
have
the momentum. You sent. I got my little card with my little 10 points on it. You know, you laid out what communities can do. Where was the follow up?
Right.
You know, where was the push legislatively? You know, even in states or on a national level, when did you take that to the Congressional Black Caucus and say, "Here's what we're working on"? When did you take it to the Democratic National Committee and say, "These points are important to Black America"?
Right.
Either you do something that's going to directly say something to this, or we out.
Because mm-hmm.
he had that kind of clout. He had that kind of influence at that time
right.
to galvanize a group of people to say, we will not continue to vote for you all if you all do not handle these first 2 points.
Right.
But we didn't do that. So maybe that's why he feels such a sense to do it now with President Obama, because he knows he missed an opportunity.
Right.
But there's a way to do it where you get your point across without coming off as nasty and vindictive and angry and bitter and all that.
So is this the beginning that Tavis will begin to move in a more positive direction, even if he still remains critical of the president? Do you believe that he will now begin to say, yeah, I understand that the President Obama needs to do this better, but he's also accomplished these things as well. And so to be able to have a critical statement towards the president would also acknowledge the positive things he's provided. Do you think this is where Tavis will take it now?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because I was watching Dr. West the other day on the Martin Bashir show on MSNBC. And so when Cornell got off on his tangent, you know, he get to talking, you know, Martin interrupted him and said, "But what about this?" And he listed like five different things the president's done. He said health care, although it doesn't go far enough,
right,
is more than what we've ever had.
Right.
He said,
right,
"What about, you know, the equal pay for women?" Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, don't ask, don't tell. And so he had like four things he listed. And Cornell was like, "Yeah, those are good." And you know, the one that he wants to say, "Well, health care, it doesn't go far enough. There's too many. It should have had, and it should have had more in it. But it's good for what we were able to get." And so Martin was like, "Well, in saying that, can you at least say the president has done something?"
Right.
You know, can you not just throw him out with the bathwater,
right,
and say, "Oh, because he hasn't said the word poor or poverty, he hasn't done anything to address poor or poverty." Because who doesn't have insurance?
Right.
Poor people.
Exactly.
People that are now in poverty that were not in poverty 2 years ago, but because their savings is now depleted and they, you know, that they are underwater now in their house, now they too are in poverty.
Right.
So he may not ever say the word poor or poverty enough, but the fact that his policies are really addressing the needs of the poor. And,
right,
and that's probably where the president is thinking, but what I'm doing is addressing the needs. So that's why his supporters have to go out and say, "Here's what we're doing for not only the middle class, but the poor," because everything has been about the middle class, and the middle class is about gone.
Exactly.
It's poor and rich.
Right.
And so now he has to change his message just a little bit and start speaking the language of the poor. But I think, you know, I'm not going to get too excited about Tappan, because I bet as soon as I do, he's going to do something. So I'm going to say for the moment, he has done well. I appreciate what he had to say with Joe Madison, because I agree with him that, you know, we have to do our part to push the president to be great. We don't want to look back on this time and say, "Wow, we really missed an opportunity." So I agree with him on that. And if he stays in this tone and tenor in terms of not being, like I said, vindictive and mean and angry and bitter, then he will get his message across a lot better. Because not only will we listen, but the president and the president's people will probably begin to listen as well. And then you'll have more people talking about it. You know, they are nationally known for going on national shows all the time. They were on Morning Joe the other day. They've been on, even on Fox. Dr. West was on Sean Hannity's show. So they go everywhere. And so if they can begin to even coin their message, where less is of an attack and more of a critique, then they'll, you know, maybe people will start listening to them again.
This is true. All right, we're going to take our we're going to pay some bills right now, and we're going to return in a minute. And when we return, we're going to shift the conversation towards Michelle Obama's interview. A couple of days ago, she conducted an interview with Gail, and so we're going to listen to the interview and talk about it a little bit when we return. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service,
Interactive consulting firm
specializing in social media marketing,
web design,
technology workshops,
as well as
leadership and management training.
So go to TaylorMade101.com.
That's TaylorMade101.com.
Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jema. And Ask Jema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Bloomfield.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. The phone lines are open, and to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I also want to talk a little bit about a summer program that we have throughout the summer. And basically, we have a program that actually feed young children. We have three groups that we deal with. We deal with the pre-K. We deal with primary, and also we deal with secondary education children. And so what we do is we feed them over the summertime for about 6 weeks during the summer. And we also provide education opportunities for them. And we cover a potpourri of different activities. This year we plan to do some golf exhibitions. We plan on taking them down to Dallas for a trip down there. We actually want to try to take them to the Science Museum. We're going to have a panel of professionals. We have a lot of things earmarked for them this summer. But we need your support to make this possible. This is our second year. We had a very productive year last year. And we are getting reports all over from our children that they're making the honor rolls, making all A's and B's. So it was a tremendous success. And to help out, just go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. Again, that's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. There's a couple of different things you can do. You can choose to donate. There's a PayPal button out there. Just click the button, donate whatever your heart desires. Or you can fill out the registration form that's out there, and you can choose to volunteer. We'll take the registration form. We'll conduct our background check, things of that nature, to make sure things are in order. And then you can come out and help with any of the three groups, the primary group, the pre-K group, or the secondary group. And we would love to have you out there. And if you can't do either of those two, well, feel free to tell your friends and family and see how they can help. Let them know what we're doing. Let them know that we're feeding hungry children over the summertime. We're also providing educational opportunities for them as well. So, again, that's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. All right, so I wanted to shift gears again to Michelle Obama's interview this week. She actually did an interview that I thought was pretty good, and so I want to talk about a little bit about that. But first, Jamie, what did you think of the interview?
Excuse me. Once again, it was open and honest and insightful into who she is as a lady, who she is as a woman first, just who mm-hmm. she is as a woman, as a mother and as a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And all those things, you know, are who I am. And so
I saw her in the White House.
And I listened to just get her insight, because she's so personable and so down
right.
to earth.
Right.
And she speaks from her heart, you know, and I just thought it was very telling that she took the time to do it. A lot of people said she shouldn't have done it, that it kind of, you know, brought her down to a certain level. And some say the book doesn't really depict her that bad. so to speak. And so she may not, and she admitted she hadn't read the book. So, you know, some was like, but I think her response wasn't just about the book. That may have been the banner hanging, but I think her sitting down and having that conversation with someone she knows very well, and Gail King, it was kudos to Gail, you know,
right.
Because no one else could have gotten that story from Gail. And so she submitted her spot with CBS News right off the top.
Right.
for being able to do that. So a week into your debut, you land a interview with the First Lady. I say that's pretty important.
Right.
I think, you know, it wasn't just about that. I think it's been about all of the talk and the characterization that they portray her as the angry black woman, going all the way back to the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that characterization of her being an angry black woman isn't new. That's how they depicted her since the very beginning. And she's never said anything.
Right.
And so why not say something 4 years later? I don't blame her. I probably would have said something a long time ago, but that's why I'm not the First Lady.
All right, so let's take a listen to the interview here.
Michelle Obama changed over the last few years. We continue our conversation now with the First Lady at the White House, starting with the topic of the day, politics.
Let's talk about the campaign.
Okay.
2012.
All right. The one coming up, you
the
mean?
The one coming up. What would Michelle Obama, January 2012, what do you wish you would have known back in 2008? What would you have told her in 2008 based on your experience and what you've done?
That's a good question. I would say just keep focusing on the work that you're doing. Focus on what's in front of you today.
Mm-hmm.
And don't read the papers. Just go campaign. Just do your thing. Talk to people directly. That's what I would say.
Has it been a learning curve for you?
The campaigning process?
No, being First Lady.
Being First Lady
of the United States.
Oh, yes. Life is a learning curve. But
also.
You know, I think you become, you know, or for me, I've become more comfortable in the issues. You know, when you start out at the beginning, for example, take childhood obesity. Can we have a conversation around this issue that's productive and doesn't make people feel defensive, but we can still, you know, move ahead?
Mm-hmm.
Can we really garner the entire nation around our military families? Will people care? Will they still? So, you know, you start out with these wonderful ideas, but you have no idea whether what you want to do with them is going to go anywhere,
yeah.
Right? So then you're a little hesitant. Then you're careful, and then you're doing more planning and learning than you are doing. You know, now we're beginning to mature in many of those issues, and we've seen commitments and movements on all sides of the issues. And then you start feeling euphoric and proud, and, you know, proud of yourself and proud of your team, but more importantly, proud of all the people who are stepping up on all of these issues.
Do you feel under the gun in the White House?
No, I don't, and I think that that's one of the reasons why I think I have the better job. You know, I mean, as First Lady, I get to pace the issues because I wasn't elected, and there aren't people sort of expecting a certain set of things within a certain amount of time. I have the luxury, truly, of defining the issue and laying out a set of goals and adjusting them where needed. The pressures are just very different in that regard, but I do feel personal pressure to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the one thing I tell my staff all the time, I just don't get into symbolic achievements. That, you know, when we walk
you
away,
want tangible results
that people can feel. I mean, the thing I say with my military family's work is that I don't want this just to be PR. I mean, I'm always asking people on the ground, do you feel what we're trying to do? And until they feel it in their own lives and in their own homes, we've got to keep working. We've got to keep figuring out how do we tap deeper so that we haven't just moved policy, but we really moved lives.
You know, I consider her to be a perfect complement to the president, and in her eloquence, in her gracefulness, in her aptitude, and her abilities, her rhetoric. I mean, everything that the president has, she is his equal. And so it's amazing to see such a powerful couple take their rightful place in the White House and for her to now be comfortable in the position of First Lady. Chima, you say what?
I agree with that. I think they are an excellent complement to one another in terms of how she can, you know, probably say some certain things that he can't say, but that she has taken her role in the White House very seriously, and she doesn't she doesn't take anything for granted because she knows at a moment's notice this could all go away. So for as long as I'm here, I'm going to do the best I can to make a difference in the lives of so many people. And she does that as often as she can. So I definitely applaud her for that.
So for you, where has she evolved or has she grown in your eyes? You know, is she in the same place as she was almost 4 years ago? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that because I've always seen her to be compassionate. I've always seen her to be caring about other people. I never saw her as just wanting to do this just for the sake of having a I'm the first lady, you know. So she's always had a certain kind of down-to-earthness, that's the word, about her, where you could just kind of sit down and have that conversation. So I don't know if it's so much as she's grown as much as it is she's polished up her messaging. And she's taken, whenever she's doing something, you know it's important to her because you see her everywhere. I mean, she is everywhere talking about military families, talking about healthy eating, and she doesn't just talk about it. She does it, you know, with the garden and with, you know, different things she's doing in the communities and in the neighborhoods and things along that nature. So it's important that she's taken seriously. And so she's mastered that. She's mastered that art of getting her point across and making people believe in what it is she wants them to believe in.
What do you make of the attacks on the First Lady over the last several years? We talked about last week, one of the representatives talked about her bottom. We talked about people, you know, making fun of her. Actually, they were showing pictures of her looking like the Grinch. We talked about people saying that she's going too far by telling people that what to eat. What do you make of these comments and these derogatory statements towards her?
It's interesting because, you know, I don't recall in this lifetime, and I definitely don't recall, and I'm going to have to do some research because maybe it was and I missed it, anything remotely like this done to Laura Bush when she was there. I know they talked a little bit about Hillary, but once she got off of the whole health care thing, they kind of left her alone. I definitely don't remember hearing anything about Barbara Bush in this manner so consistently all the time. And I think it just goes back to the fact of how we treat ourselves and how we talk about one another. As I said a couple of weeks ago, we've given somebody the right to think they can talk about us like that as well. They have no respect of the position or the office of you know, what she stands for. So it can't just be that it can't be anything other than she's a black woman who stands proud, who stands strong, who you know, admits her shortcomings, you know, who stands by her husband, who's supportive of his administration, who speaks, you know, what she thinks people need to hear. It has to be the fact that she's a strong black woman, period.
Right.
I mean, there's no other way you can dress it up, you know, to try to make it be about something else, because everything they try to make it be about, she's you know, she's knocked that down. So,
right. We got Green Beasley out in the chat room, And he's made several comments out here, and I want you to address a couple of them. He said that she knew that her job would not be easy. No matter what she does, it would never be enough. What do you think about that? Is that true?
Yes. The same goes for the president. I don't care what he does. I don't care if he balances the budget. I don't care. I mean, he brought the troops home.
Walks on water,
everybody
whatever.
Said they want it. Right. Mm-hmm. He killed the most hated man in the world with Osama. And he's done more to bring us back, not just, here, but globally as well, internationally. So it doesn't matter. It does not matter what they do. It will never be enough. And the unfortunate part about that is we know that personally.
Right. In our own lives. Yeah, absolutely.
In our own lives,
we
know personally what it's like to be the best.
Right.
To be smarter than anybody else in the room.
Right.
To be able to get the job done in the least amount of time and be the most effective, and still every day have to go in and prove that I'm supposed to be in the room.
What's interesting is that Green Beasley also said that she does sound a little pissed off. Now, so I want to put this in perspective first before I get you to comment, because he did make a great comment about he knew that her job would not be easy. No matter what she does, it would never be enough, which is true. But he said that she does sound a little pissed off. And I want you to address this, because it's interesting the fact that how African-American women are portrayed, and men, when they're passionate about a topic. And it is always, and in a lot of cases, always perceived to be angry as opposed to passionate. And so I want you to talk a little bit about your experience with that, dealing with that, because you've been in the boardroom many a day talking with passion, but it's been misconstrued as angry.
And I used to have to start my conversation to say, I'm not angry, but I feel very strongly about what I'm about to say.
Right.
Because I knew that my passion and my concern was going to be misconstrued as me being angry, because mm-hmm. I was the only one in the room that looked like me. I was the only one in the room that was talking about a particular topic. So if I'm the only one in the room that looks like me and I'm the only one in the room that's talking about something, I must be mad that this is not happening. Not that it's going to be better for the company or better for the agency, better, and at that time, better for the children we were serving. I have to be mad about something. Mm-hmm. And so, and 9 times out of 10, I wasn't mad. If I was mad, you wouldn't have to guess about me being mad.
Right.
You would know I was mad. You know, that's, you wouldn't have to guess about that. And so what if she's mad? She has every right to be.
Right.
Who, there's a line there that is crossed. You begin to talk about my character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the line that's crossed when they are saying the things that Michelle Obama and even about the president, when you talk about them as who they are as the person and not just about their policy. So when you begin to compare her to a monkey or the president to an animal,
right.
Then you begin to talk about and you call me a liar, and you do, and when you're doing all that, you daggum Skippy, I might have some feelings about that. Now, I didn't expect that to happen, because it's never happened to anybody else in the office of the presidency.
Right.
So some of this stuff is taking me a little bit off guard, because mm-hmm. I did not expect to be put in a cartoon or be put in a joke about who's going to kill me on the helicopter.
Right.
See, some of these things are just beyond belief. To
right.
have the president disrespected on the floor during the State of the Union, that has never happened in the history.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, so I'm supposed to be prepared for that. That's unrealistic. I'm not supposed to have a moment where I'm triggered by that or that upsets me. That's unrealistic. Now, that's completely unrealistic.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, he says that he detects a little sarcasm in the tone of her voice. But, you know, I would argue that she has the right to respond in a manner that's projected towards her. If you say something to me and it angers me, I should be able to respond angrily. If you say something to me that makes me happy, I should be able to respond, you know, in a happy or joyful manner. If you say something that makes me sad, I should be able to respond like that, because she's human. And so quite naturally, if you continue to attack her, if you continue to say things that are derogatory, negative, and just a plain out wrong or just a lie, then I think it's prudent for her to respond in a manner that she does, and I would do the same.
Well, and I, like I said, I find it, you know, odd that after all this time they've been in office, I think this is the first time she's had a sit-down interview where she's talking about some of these things, because normally when she's sitting down, she's talking about, you know, whatever her work it is that she's working on, or whatever project it is that she's working on. Very seldom does she, you know, get the in-depth questions such as these, as opposed to, you know, just, you know, how has things changed here in the White House and those sort of simple questions, you know, she gets from, you know, other journalists. But I think this time around she spoke some things that she just wanted to say. And now that she said it, let's move on and move on to something else.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. So speaking of moving on, I want to talk about an article you wrote last week about NC wrongfully sterilized victims that may get $50,000 each in compensation. I wanted to get you to respond. Here's what you wrote. You said that, "I am glad that something is finally being done for these people. The story first received national attention during this past summer. Their story is so sad and so unnecessary. I wonder where all the right-wing pro-life people are on this issue. These people were violated in the most egregious way possible, in my opinion. Although there is no amount of money that can be given to compensate for their loss, this is at least a start." And you were talking about the article that goes like this. "People sterilized against their will under a discredited U.S. state program should each be paid $50,000. A task force voted Tuesday, marking the first time a state has moved to compensate victims of a once common public health practice called eugenics. The panel recommended that the money go to verify living victims, including those who are now alive, or who are alive now, but may die before the lawmakers approve any compensation. North Carolina's legislators must still approve any payments. A task force reported last year said that 15,000 to 2,000 of those victims were still alive, and that the state has verified 72 victims. Now, Jimmy, what's the backstory here? Why should these people get paid?
Well, you know, and I'll do a plug for one of the shows on NBC when the first week that Brian Williams' show, Rock Center, came out. He ran a story on this. So you might want to go out there and do some research with Brian Williams on Rock Center. He did a story, in-depth story, with one of, and I believe the lady's picture that I have there on the site. He did an in-depth story with her personally and took you behind the scenes to different meetings where they were talking with different state officials about what happened and how the state officials and the Health and Human Services Department was trying to, you know, basically saying it wasn't that big of a deal, or, you know, some of the excuses they came up with were that they, people had signed – that their signatures were on documents that said that it was okay to do it, and in this particular lady's case, I mean, she had been raped, and was 14 at the time. So after she, you know, delivered, they, you know, they just felt like, oh, she's just going to keep having kids, so let's just, you know, take care of this, and they did that with poor people. People living in poverty, and unfortunately the majority of the victims were African American. And so how dare you make a decision about my life based on an incident that I had no control over, as you know, for this lady here, and then decide that I'm no longer worthy to bear children. And so you decide, based on some document that you claimed I signed when I couldn't have signed it because I was probably knocked out from the drugs from just having delivered a child, you know, how could I have, you know, signed it? And so a lot of it, they're trying to say that the victims themselves gave permission, and then a lot of the documents have been lost because it happened during the 70s, and so things have been flooded. The building was flooded, and also, I mean, so they've just come up with excuses not to take care of these people. And so this is a good sign. You know, it goes right in there along with the settlement that the black farmers got for all those years of discrimination. You know, it's a drop in the bucket. You know, you can never really pay me enough for what you've done to me emotionally, but, you know, I'll take it.
You're right, which means that these women can no longer have kids because they were made sterile because of what the people did to them. And so, and the reason why I bring this up is because it's something that we must pay attention to because over the last decade, the rhetoric around blacks and the fact that they have been kind of coerced to not have children. There was a big billboard sign talking about abortions in black little black kids. There was some came out of the legislative office talking about how the black people shouldn't be having children. So, and then now to go out and take it a step further past the rhetoric and then to make these people sterile, I thought was a very telltale sign of what's going on behind the scenes that a lot of people are just uninformed about.
Yes, so, and that's why I said to do some research, you know, go find look up the story that Brian Williams did, because it was really in depth. He even talked to, I believe, the governor right now about this particular issue and how they would try to compensate the people. So and it's so sad. I mean, it's just so sad that, and we're not talking that long ago. I mean, I was born in the 70s.
Right.
So.
And it says that North Carolina is one of about
that long ago.
A half a dozen U.S. states to apologize for this eugenics program. You know, so for them to, you know, this is not an isolated incident with what I'm trying to say. The fact that, North Carolina is now, the spotlight is on them. But if they're about one of a six states that are doing this that we know about, that's documented, then there's no telling how many others out there that are undocumented that have been doing the same practice for many years. I mean, we can go so far to say that the government has been involved in a lot of different things like this. I mean, we can go back to the Tuskegee experiment. I mean, so this is something that we need to pay a close attention to. Again, these atrocities are forwarded towards African Americans. So that's why it, to me, is kind of appalling to see this. All right.
I totally agree.
So any final thoughts? We're approaching the end of our show here. Any final thoughts?
Yes, I do have several final thoughts. One is, I don't know if I put this out there or I plan on doing it today or not, but there's been, you know, a lot of concern lately around Oprah Winfrey and her network and whether or not it's going to be able to last and, you know, all those sorts of things. And I would just like to encourage people, if you have not gone out and looked at the network, please do so tomorrow evening. Tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, Oprah will be bringing together the cast from Roots. She will have James Amos on there and all of the original cast members from the movie, the miniseries, shall I say, that was the most watched ever. When it came out 35 years ago. Can you believe that's been 35 years?
Wow.
That Roots was out. And she will be sitting down with the cast discussing the movie and things that happened, how it impacted their life. So I think that's going to be great. And all day tomorrow on the OWN Network, she will be showing different episodes of her show from when she was doing the Oprah Winfrey Show around Roots. Because, you know, we tend to say Oprah never talked about race on her show, but she really did more than we give her credit for. So she's going to all day tomorrow be different shows on about race and about Martin Luther King and ending up with the final show that she did last May where she met with several of the Freedom Riders that were still alive, that are still alive, shall I say. Mm-hmm. So I just encourage people to go out and take a look at the network and try to support her as much as you can. But I just think watching the episode is going to be great anyway, just good history.
Right.
I think the other thing for us to be able to do, let's not forget where we are as it relates to voting, making sure that our papers have all the necessary documentation. Once again, we can look at the 1911 Unite, which is the super PAC developed by the men of Kappa Alpha Psi and Omega Psi Phi fraternities, where they will use that money to do some training as well as ensure that people are getting the necessary documentation to be able to get their voter IDs, their photo IDs, so that they can go out and vote. So that's real important as well. If you're looking for calls for 2012, that's one I would strongly suggest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it.
Wow, yeah, Red Tails come out this weekend too. You going to go see that?
Of course, and let me plug another movie I saw over the weekend. Oh, my goodness. I saw Joyful Noise on Friday with Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton and Kiki mm-hmm. Palmer, and I have to say it was a really good movie. I know it's a story we've seen before in terms of a choir that's going out and they're competing and they don't win and then they do. But it is this storyline is a little different. It's not just about the choir. You see some things in it. You see some storylines that, I mean, you're like, huh? You know, some you expect and some you didn't. Mm-hmm. But I think both of them, Dolly Parton and Queen Latifah, magnificent job holding this cast together. Courtney Vance, he played the minister of the church. So if you want to feel good, go see tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If you're off after you've left your Martin Luther King parade, go see Joyful Noise. And of course, I will to see Red Tails when it comes out on Friday. I remember when the HBO movie came out years ago with Larry Fishburne. They came out on HBO about the Tuskegee Airmen and mm-hmm. how that was so much information that we didn't know.
Right.
Then. So here we are now, and we're going to get some more. And what George Lucas has stated is that if this movie does well, he's already ready for a sequel, and he's already ready to do a prequel, which means he will show us before they became the Tuskegee Airmen. So he already has two movies ready to go. So the telltale sign will be how well this movie does this weekend. Coming up, opening weekend, it's always critical, always major. So we have to make sure we are there live in full effect, be able to see this and prove that stories with a cast that's, you know, majority African-American can be sold out at the movie theaters. And there's a story that we want to hear about. We just, you know, we get all the funding for the shoot 'em up, bang, bang.
Right.
You know,
right.
The hustle and flows of the world. We get all
right.
the money for that. But when it's time to tell a positive story, that one's of encouragement, lifting, and what it means to work hard, then, because, see, that kind of story kicks in the butt the Newt Gingriches of the world.
Right,
and the Rick Santorums of the world and the Mitt Romneys of the world and even the Ron Pauls of the world who want to say we don't do nothing. And who want to say that, you know, we want something for nothing.
Right.
You know, these people, you know, was willing to give their life for a country that didn't even respect them. So you have to put everything in context. They were willing to go out there and fight for their country that they knew could give less, you know, than a hill of beans about them. So that's a story to be told. And I'm so glad he's done it. And I pray that we go out and support it in full numbers again.
Yeah, I mean, it is basically George Lucas saying that, you know, we have to make this movie successful. I know that's kind of a stretch, you know, because he's in business, right? This is a business. But the reality is, this film has been held up for release since 1942 when it was shot. And when you look at the film and how it's put together, you can tell it was filmed back then. So it has a lot of authenticity to it. And it's an all-black movie. There are no major white roles in it at all. And this is the reason why it was held up for so long, because it couldn't get the funding. So now George Lucas has, you know, went out on the limb basically to film this. And he has so much footage that he's able to roll out, as Gene said, you know, the prequel and the sequel to it. And it is really incumbent upon us to go out and see this movie once, twice, three, four times, whatever it takes to put this movie on the top, to show them that, yes, we will support movies of this fashion. So, Jimmy, any other final comments?
No, I think I've said enough for today.
All right. As always, we enjoy your comments. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank to all my listeners out there. And Green Beasley, that means you two out in the chat room. And yes, Carla, I see you out there. I appreciate you joining us. And of course, a special thanks to my co-host, Jima, the wonderful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog. And that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's all one word. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.